welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex? Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen! And not a one of you is prepared for it!
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jade.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 2009 McGee-directed film Terminator Salvation. Shall we just dive right in? Because I have a question right off the bat.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'll let you introduce the movie in a second, Drew. But first of all, is this the first Terminator movie where no one goes back in time?
Probably, yes.
Yeah.
Not a single person went back in time. The only time travel they had was fucking, it took me 2 hours out of my life that I will never get back.
Well, he was cryogenically advanced.
Yeah, okay.
But that wasn't time travel
but
as much as suspension.
But nobody went back in time, yeah.
No.
I mean, everybody goes forward in time. Like, I'm doing it right now. It's not a big feat.
Also, this movie was a bunch of other movies.
Oh, my God. Yes, it was every cliche ever.
I'm just going to spoil it right from the get-go. So, it's V for Vendetta. It's War of the Worlds, then it's Transformers, then it's Tron, then it's Mad Max. So then it had an Apocalypse Now moment, and then it was The Matrix.
Did either of you look into what the movie was supposed to be?
No. Do you know? Will you enlighten us, or should we talk about the movie and then you can tell us what it should have been?
Sure. Either way.
Okay. Well, So, Brother Drew, this is your fault.
I am a completionist.
Well, and I have to say, if I divorce myself from this being a Terminator film, this is a fine, serviceable action film, just on its own.
No,
I mean it's.
No, it's not.
Sure, it is.
No,
it
has, it's not.
It has explosions and effects and robots, and it's fine.
No,
that's fine. I'm not saying it's great.
This is a series of cutscenes and a video game.
Look,
is what it is.
I'm not saying it's great. I'm saying it's fine. I'm not saying I think it's a great movie. I'm just saying it's fine.
Your opinion is wrong.
Well, I am the judge here.
That's true. Okay, sorry, I interrupted your judging.
I'm no Sarah Palin, but
none of us are Sarah Palin.
She's getting her own judge show.
Well, we'll see. She's going to do a pilot and see if anybody buys it.
She's going to do a pilot? What's his name? Badumtis. Anyway. I think, in my opinion, never to be humble, it's a fine action flick. It's not great, but it's fine. But as a Terminator movie, it's not. It's barely a passable movie. It was nice. I mean, I like Sam Worthington, having watched Avatar recently. So I was like, hey, that's the Avatar guy. Helena Bonham Carter was a shock. So.
Yes, it was a shock for me too. And apparently there was other plans with her, but life got in the way of her plans too.
She almost died, right?
She didn't almost die that I know of, but five relatives were in South Africa on a safari. And they were in a minibus, and it killed four of them.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Of her family?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Her cousin, looks like her cousin was the main person, Fiona Carter. She escaped with a broken shoulder. But Fiona's son, Marcus, was 14 and died. Mother, Brenda, 74. Stepfather, Francis, 75. And sister-in-law, Kate Boardman, 54, all died. Nice. And, of course, she's in the middle of New Mexico filming this silly movie, and so they said, oh, you can have a leave of absence indefinitely to go deal with that. So she had much less of a part than she was going to.
Oh, well, I mean, it was nice on them, I suppose. I don't think it detracted from the movie.
No, I don't think she was necessary at all. I mean, she did fine, but I don't think she was necessary.
Well, it was slightly, she was slightly necessary, because without her, you don't have the backstory.
No, that's fine. I mean, somebody could have played that, but it didn't have to be her. Oh, it could have been anybody.
Yeah, that's true.
So, shall we actually just give it into the plot?
Yeah, the minuscule plot.
Have you seen the movie?
By the way, also, I neglected to mention, also Hunt for Red October.
Okay, you'll have to. Oh, yes, of course. Yeah, because of the submarinage.
Well, the submarinage and the fact that they killed themselves.
Yeah. So,
in all fairness, this movie is a mess, but there are some really interesting concepts that it introduces that I wish it had explored more. So there's stuff here. It was just a giant misfire. So, and we can talk about those elements as we go through the plot, but that there's some good stuff here. They just didn't capitalize on it, and it was a big swing and a miss.
Yeah, most definitely.
Did this movie make money?
Well, yeah, the budget was $200 million, and the box office was $371 million.
Oh, well,
so it did okay. Right. I mean, it did fine.
Probably close to break even along with all the marketing money.
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, and then of course, you know, video rights and stuff, that'll add up a little bit. Although I don't think this is on anybody's, I mean, I think you probably get this free if you buy the pack that has the Terminator, like, 1 and 2 on it. And this, to me, this was where special effects got in the way. Like, all the CGI really did not serve them very well. It looked fine, but again, it looked like a cutscene in a video game.
What I really want to know that I have no idea about is, did they have Arnold's permission? And did he get paid?
I don't know whether he got paid, because I think he was actually governor at the time, but they did have his permission.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think he could get paid, but I think that they had his permission. That's the reason that they couldn't use him, but they could use his likeness.
There's a whole question, by the way, now, which we can get into now if you want, but the idea of somebody's likeness. Like, I know people got upset when, you know, Fred Astaire was dancing with a vacuum cleaner or whatever in a commercial. Like, Fred Astaire's family were really upset that they used his likeness. Mm-hmm. But theoretically, especially once they get like a 3D scan of an actor, which they could, of course, do now that they couldn't do for, say, John Wayne, they can actually put you in a movie without even asking you. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like a whole thing about like when they did the Runaways movie and they approached Lita Ford to sell her life story for $1,000. And she's like, my life story is worth more than $1,000. And they said, well, not to us. So forget it. We're just going to cut you basically out of the movie. So she's like the guitarist and probably arguably at one point, the most famous, well, second most famous member of the band. And yet hardly in the movie. So anyhow, yeah. So the idea of actually using somebody's likeness in a computer generated movie is kind of fascinating.
But it was a pretty good likeness.
Yeah, it was fine.
It was better than the first Terminator movie.
yeah, like the fake head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But not nearly as charming.
No. It's true, yes. Yeah, that's the other thing about this movie is it's pretty cold. Well, lots of action scenes, but nothing, especially...
And Christian Bale seemed to have this strange hick accent that would come and go.
Well, Christian Bale was Batman. He wasn't pleasant at all. He was much too self-important and serious.
Yeah, I didn't like him.
Neither.
That was one of the interesting ideas that they didn't really explore in a satisfying way. You know, the fact that it was possible that John Connor was going to get brought up to think he was a savior, and then when the time came, no one would believe him.
It's true. Well, or as we explored a little bit in Sarah Connor, or at least we got a glimpse of, it's possible that he was brought up to think he was a savior, and that was just a lie. I mean, there was no, you know. I mean, you know, he only knows what his mom told him, and his mom is a crazy person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there was, when this movie came out, there was a rumor that the original ending was completely different than the ending that they ended up with.
I wished for a different ending.
Yeah. I actually, when I thought that, well, I don't know if I should spoil it or not, but...
Yeah, might as well, because we're into the movie.
When I thought he was going to be killed by the Terminator in the Skynet facility, I was like, well, I like this. This is awesome. I like where this is going.
Yeah.
And then they didn't kill him. And I'm like, oh, fuck, that was just pointless.
Well,
one of the rumor was that, and this is something that we've kind of talked around being a possibility and maybe being suggested, like on the TV show. The rumor was that John Connor did die, and they took Marcus and essentially just cut up his face and turned him into John Connor.
See, that would have been a better movie.
Yeah, so that would have been I think that would have been something they explored, like in a sequel, is that, you know, what if John Connor is actually a robot Terminator?
See, that would have been a better movie.
Yeah, absolutely. It would have been an interesting twist in the whole thing. But yeah, instead, but they went for Old Yeller. Out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, not Old Yeller. They chickened out and went for the easy thing. And everybody now has, at least on paper, mended fences. But you had mentioned before that Christian Bale at one point suggested he would never work with McGee again. That may actually still be the case.
Yeah. I think Christian Bale blamed everything that went wrong with the movie on the director.
Well, which, you know, I mean, that is the director is the boss. Ultimately,
I think he even blamed his meltdown where he yelled at the dude. I think he said that was the director's fault.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, and, you know, this whole actors being weirdos is, you know, I mean, that's going to be a theme in the podcast. But, yeah, again, if he was more human, if the John Connor character in this movie was more human. But he wasn't. He was just
he was robotic.
Yeah, he was just an action hero archetype with no. I mean, he had a pregnant wife, and you didn't. It wasn't so much as.
He didn't say her name once, by the way.
Oh yeah, well that makes sense. Yeah, he clearly cared about nobody. And I like the fact in the beginning that he was told that he was not in charge. You know, Michael Ironside. Hey, he's like, dude, I was in Scanners. You are not in charge.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that concept. I love that he sort of has his shadow following that you know, some people think he's a savior, but you know, and as far as the command structure of the resistance goes.
Command clearly does not.
Yeah.
I mean he had authority. He was like in charge of that base, right?
Yeah.
But
well and he also carried the resistance.
Yeah.
So the resistance followed him, and so, you know, even though he had higher command, he still had the minions beneath him. It appeared that he built the following.
Yeah, when the shit went down, somehow the movie didn't do a good job of laying the foundation for this, but somehow he had the charisma to essentially stage a mass mutiny.
He was, I'm trying to think of a modern example. But I can't think of one. I mean, he was like the larger than life figure that had, you know, he was kind of the messiah figure from the beginning, but he also was kind of a, you know, he could be the face of the resistance because he was an attractive face and his name recognition, but it doesn't mean that he has to be actually the day-to-day leader of the operation. I mean, he's a figurehead, theoretically, but not from high, but, you know, from like mid-level figurehead.
Like,
sure,
like Prince Charles,
yeah, or like Captain America.
Yes,
I mean, that's I don't know. I was thinking like Audie Murphy, but I don't know enough about like World War II history to even know if he was a World War I soldier. But you know, we make heroes in real time, so I don't know. Anyway, is this worth seeing? you know, if you're gonna, if you've been with us on this Terminator trek, you might as well hit Salvation because it's not gonna actually harm you. You know, it doesn't take anything away from the other movies. It's just fine. It's just they don't do very anything that's super exciting. Although I kind of like the beginning where they kind of, they're sort of piecing together that point between when John Connor as a teenager, you know, changed Judgment Day and when the actual final fight against the Resistance and Skynet in the future, the 2027 or whatever, we're starting to get a little bit more of that history explained. So we have Dr. Serena Kogan, Helena Bonham Carter, in 2003. She's of Cyberdyne Systems, so that already kind of takes it away from T3 a little bit. She convinces death row inmate Marcus Wright, Sam Worthington, from Avatar and Clash of the Titans. And by the way, the further along this movie got, the more I just thought he looked a little bit like a buffer Brian Austin Green. I mean, I definitely got that vibe. No?
He is no Derek Reese.
Well, of course. So anyway, so yeah, so Marcus Wright is a big bad guy. He's going to be executed. And I thought they actually did the scene where they used the Lecter device. Are you familiar with the engineer who made the lethal injection machines for the a bunch of states in the South? I think his name is Fred Lecter. And there's a very interesting documentary on him because, you know, the whole, you know, partly he's the inventor of this machine. But also he kind of went off on the deep end and is a Holocaust denier.
Cool.
So it takes an interesting turn. Yeah. Anyway, so I don't remember the name of the documentary, but I will. I think it's like, it's not Dr. Death, because that would be Kevorkian.
Maybe Dear Zachary?
No, no. No, Dear Zachary has some charm to it. Although, it's a good documentary. The Lecter documentary is pretty good. It's just this guy, I don't know. Like, his journey to being reviled is an interesting one. So, he's already a weirdo. But, anyway. That's real life. Back to the movies. So, we have Marcus Wright being executed. And he has signed over his body for medical research. And then, a year later...
After giving a horrific, what he calls a kiss of death.
Yes. He wants a kiss from Helena Bonham Carter.
Yeah, he's not very charming.
No. Not at all. So, that's a year later. So, I mean, theoretically, this could fall under the timeline, right? If it takes a year after he's executed, because theoretically, Cyberdyne could have been bought by Air Force or whatever. Who knows?
I think this movie imagines that T3 never actually happened.
Yeah, probably. T3 didn't really, like I said, one of the problems with T3 was that it didn't really advance the history along very much. So, I mean, I think T3 can exist in every world because it takes place over the course of like a day, right?
True.
Yeah, not very long at all. So a year after he's executed, Skynet systems activated. It sees humans as threats to his own existence and eradicates much of its humanity, or much of humanity, rather. In an event known as Judgment Day. And originally, the script had Helena Bonham Carter being a cyborg, which kind of matches up with her weird acting choices. Like, I think she has had 10 parts, acting roles, where she's had, like, false teeth, intentionally ugly. So she likes those kind of characters. But, yeah, then she had that family tragedy, so that took her out of that thing anyway. So we flash forward to 2018, and John Connor, played by Christian Bale, is leading an attack by the Resistance on the Skynet base. And in this attack, he discovers human prisoners and plans for the development of a new type of Terminator incorporating living tissue. But he ends up being the only apparent survivor of the attack on the base when it's destroyed with a small nuclear explosion.
Yeah, and he seemed really concerned about the plans for this new Terminator. And I couldn't tell. I mean, he was not very emotive as a character, or maybe as an acting choice by Batman. But I couldn't tell if he was surprised or just concerned that history was about to repeat itself for him.
So he turns out he's not the only survivor of the conflagration. Marcus emerges from the wreckage of the base, and he's now on foot after getting some snazzy clothes from resistance fighters. And this is where we head to Fallout.
He screams a lot.
He does.
Like, randomly.
Yeah. He's a screamer, but he is also level-headed.
Mm-hmm. Was there any doubt in your mind from his reappearance that he was a machine?
Nope.
Yeah, no. Absolutely not.
Okay.
Nope. From the moment he signed on Cyberdyne at the contract in the jail, I knew exactly what was going on.
It was sort of interesting where they went, but we're going to get to that because it wasn't greatly interesting.
If they had left Cyberdyne off the form completely, if they would have just had his consent and her never mentioned Cyberdyne, that would have been a much better movie.
Yeah, this is the type of movie where it seems like they made the wrong choice every single time.
Yeah.
Well, didn't you say that they rewrote this because Christian Bale wanted a bigger part?
Yeah, the original concept was to have John Connor as a really small supporting character, maybe even not in it until the very end, and really focus on Marcus and Kyle Reese and really be sort of a Kyle Reese vehicle. And they were, I think they were looking at Christian Bale as Marcus, but he decided that if he was going to be in a Terminator movie, he wanted to be John Connor. So when they signed on, they sort of had to rework the story to make the John Connor role a bit bigger, which I think now 4 movies and a TV show in has been demonstrated that John Connor might be the least interesting character in the entire Terminator universe.
Because no matter what happens in the universe, we know what's going to happen to him or there would be no movie.
Yeah. I mean, I think the most interesting version was the Thomas Dekker version on the television show, and that was probably because he was supported by such a terrific ensemble.
Oh, well, so, and had room to, they had room to explore lots of different little areas.
Mm-hmm.
Our mother is almost through, at least was because of a couple days ago, and was a little bit hung up in all the Monster of the Week episodes. And the fact that they did Monster of the Week episodes, but didn't tie any loose ends up along the way.
Well, and I had a discussion with her about that. I was trying to explain that I thought that they thought that they were trying to seed the third season and they were trying to do some kind of early exposition for later episodes, not realizing there was not going to be any later episodes.
Well, and unfortunately, the first season was not great in that regard, because they had lots of little threads that they didn't tie up either. You know, they had that whole subplot of the girl that killed herself at the school and the graffiti and the relationship with the teacher that just went nowhere.
Yeah.
I'm just impressed. Mom's working her way through that series. That's quite a time commitment. What a podcast supporter she is.
She is.
Shout out to Mom.
Absolutely.
Yeah, way to go.
She should get a mug, I think. You know, Jason, we have mugs. Have I mentioned that?
I actually sent her mugs of my own.
Yeah. Yeah, he knows about mugs. He had to make them himself.
So, yeah, if anybody does any silk screening, you ought to make t-shirts. That'd be great. Not in a creepy t-shirt. Yeah. So, sorry, back to John Connor. So, John Connor is like a stoic action hero. But he doesn't have, like, a sidekick to give him heart. Like, isn't that what a sidekick is supposed to do? If you're going to
We know who gives him heart.
Oh
my God. Very nice.
I think Terry Crews would have been the most awesome sidekick he could have hoped for.
Yeah.
Terry Crews. They only decided to show Terry Crews as a corpse.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Now, why did he get cut? I read that he got cut, but I don't know why.
I have no idea. But he would have been awesome in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
This movie needed some Terry Crews.
This movie needed some Kevin Hart. Anybody. It could have been... Well, not anybody. I mean, probably Emo not Phillips. Would have. Would, yeah, yeah, Emo Phillips would have been. Well, I don't know. Emo Phillips.
Crispin Glover.
All the way. I was thinking it wouldn't probably deal with like Kevin James very well, or an Adam Sandler, or
Seth
more like
Rogen.
Yeah, more like who's Adam Sandler's ever-present buddy?
Rob Schneider.
Yeah, Rob Schneider will show up as a comic relief.
Oh God.
Yeah, that would have been a different kind of movie. I wouldn't have necessarily approved of that either, but something, there has to be some levity. You don't have, you know. I mean, you didn't want to necessarily go all T3 with the levity, but this had none of that. There was no talk to the hand in this movie. So, John returns to the Resistance headquarters located aboard a nuclear submarine and tells General Ashdown, Michael Ironside, who, by the way, has 235 acting credits, including Scanners, Total Recall, The Machinist, Top Gun, and Starship Troopers.
He's been in everything.
Oh, he has.
The Machinist?
Apparently, yeah.
He wasn't the thumb guy, was he?
I don't know. I haven't seen The Machinist. It seemed depressing.
Okay. Toe thumbs.
Okay. So, yeah. So, Michael Ironside is the leader of the Resistance. And they've got that base on the sub. And meanwhile, so the Resistance has discovered this radio frequency that's capable of shutting down Skynet machines. So they're going to take advantage of this this new tool they have to shut down the machine so they can finally take control and wipe out Skynet once and for all.
This windfall of fortune.
Yes. And they, in the meantime, they've also encountered the Skynet kill list that indicates the plan to kill the Resistance command staff in 4 days' time. And his own name, John's own name, is second on that list. And who's first?
Kyle Reese.
Kyle Reese. Who actually, I actually liked Kyle Reese in this. I mean, I thought Anton Yelchin did a fine job. He disappeared during the middle of the movie, but his, you know, he seemed to play it with the right attitude. He had comic relief. He and Sam, he was Sam Worthington's comic relief.
He also got the iconic line, come with me if you want to live.
Yeah. Yeah. So he was something of like a street rat badass.
Mm-hmm. He was good.
Yeah. So now the Resistance leaders don't know that Kyle Reese is in any way important to Skynet, but John knows. Because he knows Kyle Reese is his father in the future, which again is probably hard to wrap your mind around. But we don't have to worry about it because we never see the inner working of John Connor's mind because he just gives glares to the camera. And his contemplative look is also the same as his angry look. Is also the same as his...
needs a shower look.
Yeah, exactly. So he has a pregnant wife played by Bryce Dallas Howard. We know from The Help and Jurassic World and Spider-Man 3.
And she was Kate Brewster, right?
Yes, she was.
Well, we don't know because he never said her fucking name.
Well, presumably she was the pregnant Kate Brewster.
Yes, presumably it was Kate.
Yeah. Yeah. She is a minor character in the show.
That's all right. I don't think I've ever heard Dad say Mom's name.
Okay, that's actually quite possible. I'm just scouring my memory. And,
yeah.
Yeah. Huh, interesting.
No, it's a thing.
Wow. That'll be in our
That's
Mother's
going
Day
into
episode.
Father's Day podcast.
Mother's Day, Father's Day, all the days. So, also, we find out that John sends radio transmissions around the world, kind of like he did in the end of T3, where he's talking to little Resistance outposts all over the country and presumably the world.
So, I thought this was a callback to T3 here.
Yeah, could have easily been. And, you know, so again, this is one of those things, like we've all read or listened to World War Z, right?
Yes.
That whole that whole story about the pilot. The pilot, crashes.
Right.
Yeah. And she's got the person over the radio guiding her and helping her out. And that John Connor could have been that, too. John Connor doesn't have to be in any of these movies, as it turns out, from now on. I mean, I think the series did the best thing by not including John Connor in the future at all.
That would have been fascinating.
Because really, I mean, he's probably better to be like, he'll just transcend from Jesus to God. And that way he's, you know, he's helping from the far or even the future, but he's not very tangible. So you
talk about salvation.
Well, yeah, well, exactly. And you do what John Connor would do, or you do what you think John Connor wants you to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, and everybody dies for John Connor, right? We all die for John Connor.
Very true.
Yes. Megan Fox's acting career had to die when she was married to Brian Austin Green for John Connor. Or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably the most important legacy of the TV show was that when I heard that Megan Fox and Brian Austin Green had split up, I thought, that's a bad move for Megan Fox.
Yeah, that was... poor Megan Fox. Has she been in anything good?
I thought Jennifer's Body was good.
I've never seen it, but I've heard good things.
That movie is right up your alley.
Okay. All right. Copy that.
Especially if you don't like Maroon 5.
Not so much. Yeah.
Of course you don't, because your daughter sings it.
Well, just that one song. We've been singing a lot of Merry Melodies, interstitial music from the Boomerang channel. Have you experienced?
I don't understand anything that you just said.
That's true. So sorry to talk kid talk, but Drew, do you watch the Boomerang channel with the kids?
It is not in heavy rotation.
Okay. Yeah, because it wasn't.
But I am aware of it.
Are you aware of the new interstitial music things? I bought the album. It includes the songs such as what I thought. I played a couple songs for your mom. One of them I think is like a Hollies or maybe a Buffalo Springfield kind of vibe, where they have, it's a Tasmanian Breakdown.
I don't know.
Is he upset about a girl?
No.
It's anyone's guess, because he's not the best communicator in the world.
Don't judge me.
We'd love to get settled down, but he just smashed through the wall. He got the police chasing after him, because he's headed for the mall. Tasmanian meltdown coming.
And there's also a really funny kind of almost like a rap battle between Chicken Hawk and Foghorn Leghorn.
Chicken Hawk getting hungry. Chicken Hawk getting hungry.
I want some chicken to eat. It is my favorite meat. I like it crispy or glazed. It puts me in a daze. I like it fried up or baked. On my birthday, I eat chicken cake.
Chicken Hawk's not a chicken. He's just a hawk that eats chicken.
Now, just one second. All right, I've got something for your appetite. There's so many things that you could eat. There's a Chinese restaurant down the street. Oh, how about a fish taco, son? This bakery's got good honey buns.
So juicy, so tasty. Hey, chicken, get in my mouth.
How about
And then there's Elmer Fudd, or is it Porky Pig? Can't remember. Singing about going home to eat the grilled cheese sandwich. And then there's Pepe Le Pew singing a straight-up rape song. So it's great. And there's a Yosemite Sam song about anger management. But
that sounds on brand for Pepe Le Pew, actually.
Oh, yeah, totally. And what turned me onto the whole thing, what I could not believe, was when I was, you know, because it'll be on and I'll be editing or whatever, so I'll be listening to, you know, it's just white noise in the background. But all of a sudden I hear like 80s metal or, you know, kind of a Black Sabbath Dio kind of vibe, or actually more like a Tenacious D vibe, the song called The Wizard. And it's Daffy Duck, who's basically having a daydream or a real dream in the lazy boy chair. But he it's like a 4-minute song that I'll include a little snippet from here.
Behold the wizard. Beware his powers. Unspeakable powers. Under the gaze of the necromancer, a silver staircase starts to rise. People stand
It sounds great.
Yeah. So I highly recommend my music pick of the week is Merry Melodies from season one. Back to the ruins of Los Angeles.
Nice segue.
Yeah, thank you. Oh, by the way, I didn't point out that one of John's chief officers or whatever is named Barnes. He's played by Common. And then we actually run into the ruins of Los Angeles, and Marcus is saved from a T-600 Terminator by Kyle Reese, played by Anton Yelchin, who we know from Hearts in Atlantis, the reboot of Star Trek in 2009, and the reboot of Fright Night in 2011. And also, he has a mute companion, whose name is Star, played by Jada Grace Barry.
I was so happy that they didn't use the cloying ending where she says something to Marcus at the end of the movie.
Yeah, yeah, that would have been...
I was waiting for it, just like, you know, she doesn't talk, and then suddenly at the end of the touching, like, oh, she says something. Oh, I was just waiting for that.
You're just waiting to pounce and destroy that little girl.
I love you, John Connor.
No, Marcus, not John.
Well, either way.
You're not John Connor.
Yeah. anyway, we have some... Again, I thought this Kyle Reese was fun. You know, he's not a member of the Resistance, but he's a survivor. So he's made up his own little Home Alone booby traps. And he's got some skills, but he's not... You know, he's no John Connor. And
he is super young.
Oh, yes.
He's like, the timelines weren't really working out for me, you know, with how old Christian Bale was and how young his father was.
Yeah, it's, again, it's weird. It's not great.
Yeah, because it would have been like another 15 years before he would have gotten sent back.
Right. And maybe that was okay, but... This movie never gave us any context about where we were in the war with the machines. Like, we don't know how far we were far away from the victory that John Connor was supposed to lead right before Skynet sent a Terminator back to kill his mother. Like, I just have no concept of where in that history we were in this movie.
But wasn't that intentional, though? Because it was trying to throw us off?
Or they were trying to be able to milk it for another sequel?
Well, maybe. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
I don't ascribe any intentionality to this movie at any point along the way.
Well, who were the ghostwriters that came in to do the script revisions? There were a couple uncredited, including, what is it, Paul Haggis, maybe? We'll have to look it up. There's a machine that'll tell us that in the future. Yeah, so then we hear a little bit about, you know, John is on the radio doing broadcasts, and so, you know, that's familiar and fun. And then they end up, after they defeated the T-600, they end up being spotted by one of the drones. So they have to destroy the drone, and then they're on their epic hero's journey trek. And in the desert, Kyle spots a resistance symbol at an abandoned 7-Eleven. And the man who meets them is hostile and refuses to lend them food or gasoline. But the compound's leader, played by Virginia, Jane Alexander, refuses to let the trio leave until Star gets some food. Unfortunately, the compound is then attacked by a harvester machine.
A la War of the Worlds. Including the War of the Worlds machine noises, by the way.
Oh, I've never seen the whole Tom Cruise War of the Worlds.
Oh, God. No, I can give you a synopsis. It's 2 hours of Dakota Fanning screaming. Done.
But yeah, so we have the skill crane that comes and picks up the people. And that's kind of fun. So we have lots of little action things that, again, I'm going to yada yada the action scenes here. But to me, they weren't very satisfying. I think there's one action scene that I kind of liked. And that had to do with a tiny bit of Guns N' Roses and the Moto Terminators or whatever they called them. Which, if you've seen the Moto Terminator designs, the designs they had were super cool compared to what actually made it up into the movie. Like, I think there was a design where the Terminator, like the T-800 or whatever head, is kind of part of the in the front of the bike where, like, maybe a headlamp would be. And so it would be like the Terminator arms would go down and be like the forks to the front wheel.
That sounds terrifying.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of production design on these robots.
By the way, uncredited writers on this movie, Paul Haggis and Jonathan Nolan.
Which is Christopher Nolan's brother?
Mm-hmm. Like, writer of Memento, right?
Yeah. So then we end up with Reese and the little girl being collected in the harvester. And Marcus having to try to follow them out of there. And he's fighting the Terminator, big things. In the meantime, we've got...
And as it turns out, he's really good at fighting Terminators.
Yes, he is.
Imagine that.
Yeah.
And very good at not dying when they hurl him into a riverbank at 100 miles an hour.
Well, that's the other thing, is that you could tell he's a Terminator because he can throw Terminators through walls and they can throw him through walls and it doesn't kill either of them. So, so Marcus and Kyle are trying to escape. But they're followed by the Moto Terminators and an aerial HK, and the Moto Terminators are destroyed in the chase, but then Kyle and Star are captured by the Harvester, and then the Resistance sends some A-10 Warthogs into the desert. So, was it security aviation in Alaska that just the guys just got convicted of a long time for fraud? The one guy in particular... They ran. Do you remember the small company, Security Aviation? The guy basically spent $50 million of this old lady's money.
I have not heard this.
Yes. He's going, and his only defense was he just mismanaged the money. But he also bought his friend and business partner a World War II Corsair plane, from Black Sheep Squadron. Which neither of them could fly, because apparently that's a very difficult aircraft to fly. So he simply bought it to impress his friends. Anyway, but they were also trying to... they bought fighter planes and were basically attempting... I think they were arrested initially for attempting to buy, missiles that they could launch from their planes. Because they had this whole aviation idea set up where they would have... ground transport and aerial support and hovercrafts and all sorts of crazy things. But it was all a pipe dream of a guy who was stealing money from like a 90-year-old, very, very rich woman. So that's when
you
I saw...
You tell the best stories.
When I saw the... that's not very nice of you. So when I saw the A-10 Warthogs on scene, I thought, oh, somebody must have known somebody who could get some A-10 Warthogs. Like, that's why they were in this movie.
But, just lying around surplus somewhere.
I'm thinking friend of a friend. But anyway.
Possibly.
I don't know. Yeah, you're right. My story sucks. Yeah. Fuck you all. I'm leaving.
No,
I'm
just saying it wasn't very uplifting. Yeah. But by the way, as a tangent or segue or, tangent. Let's call it tangent. We're always tangent. Steve Martin and Dee Dee Brickell were on Stephen Colbert the other night.
Okay.
And I don't know if you know, you probably didn't watch. I'm probably the only one that watches, so.
I don't even know, that is Colbert, does he have a show on a regular TV?
He took David Letterman's show.
Okay.
So, yes. But Steve Martin, you know, is still using the not have way.
Oh, awesome. It's a good line.
It is. It made me laugh and think of you.
Oh, thank you.
Fondly.
Another sort of a backhanded compliment, but I will take it at this point.
No, it's fun. It's a fun
after memory. You left a coil of rope right on my last story.
Oh, jeez.
No, I'm blank. Okay, so.
Yeah, but
I'll console myself with my extra mug.
The planes made me think about the planes and the sub and like the military bases. Again, there's some seemingly incompatible circumstances with what we were led to believe with how Skynet destroyed humanity before they knew it, because the Resistance had quite a bit of infrastructure and they were largely out in the open. I mean, they kept the command hidden in the sub, but
They were having fires, fires.
They had a huge base where they launched airplanes. And that is not how I imagine the Resistance in the future after watching the first couple movies.
Yeah, because if you were some big malevolent computer program that was nuking things, wouldn't be the first thing you would do when you found a base is just nuke it?
You think?
Yeah, and even at the end of T3, the only people on the radio were like the civil air defense squadrons.
Yeah, like people out in their Unabomber shacks with their, you know, ham radios.
Yeah, and tiny planes.
Yeah.
That land on airstrips, not huge military bases.
Yeah.
Also, after all those years, where would you be finding all this gasoline that hadn't gone bad?
Well, not only that, but gasoline and, you know, like...
jet fuel.
Like air-to-air missiles and all sorts of crazy stuff. I mean, you know, finding it in a surplus bunker is one thing. For small arms, but yeah, how do you equip a couple of A-10s? I don't know. I mean, it would not have been surprising to see a full-scale aircraft carrier at some point.
Yeah, not at all. I mean, this was a huge military force, the Resistance.
So, and they are mounting their forces anyway, because they're going to do this major attack, because now they got that secret weapon. Once they test it out to see if it works, they've got that secret weapon. In the meantime, so Marcus has lost his friends, but he locates A-10s gets killed by the HKs. This is gonna it makes me sad even saying these words. But the other warthog is merely wounded by the HK or the Harvester or whatever, and we have a pilot who ejects from the plane, ends up in a tree or a cactus or something. And that is Blair Williams, played by Moon Bloodgood from Falling Skies, among other things. And I thought she was fine. I mean, you know, she was no Jody from the TV series, but she was okay.
Shout out to all those half-Korean actresses out there.
I should say, by the way, you notice that... that Marcus got a Jeep.
I didn't. Oh, yeah. I mean, it makes sense. But was there a Jeep placement in this movie heavily?
Well, Sarah Connor had a Jeep.
Sarah Connor had lots of Dodge products, too.
But, well, but at the end of Terminator, she drove to...
Oh, that's true.
She drove off in a Jeep.
Oh, yeah. You're right. So, by the way, the actress Moon Bloodgood, best name ever for a real person. So, we have... Blair Williams, who falls out of the sky, and Marcus cuts her out and saves her from a Terminator attack. And then they have this weird cuddling scene out in the desert. And she's into the cuddling, and he's not sure of himself.
Ooh, what a strong heart you have.
Oh, yeah. Well, you think that'll come up later.
This is after he saves her from
the rape gang
of attackers, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Where she shoots the guy in the crotch.
Yes.
And Marcus seems to have some moral issues where he is okay to kill people, but she's not.
More because he's programmed to kill people.
Yeah. Okay, so I yada yada the rape gang. So they end up being... Blair is going to lead Marcus back to the base. And they have the one last layer of defense before they can get into the resistance base is the magnetic minefield, which, you know, I don't know.
Doesn't end well for...
Oh, for anybody.
Yeah.
Really. The longer he stayed in the closet, it would have been better for everyone.
Yeah. At this point, there are only two people who don't know that Marcus is a Terminator, and that's Marcus and Blair.
Yes. So Marcus, of course, attracts a magnetic landmine because he's a Terminator. And so they bring him into the resistance base, and they discover that he is a cyborg. And John Connor is...
John Connor.
Exactly. He's...
I am John Connor.
So the fact that Marcus was strung... Oh, by the way, this is not the only rear differential transmission... Of a vehicle that was in this movie. They were all over the place. But he was strung up in like Christ pose while he's being interrogated.
Salvation.
And Marcus Wright is saying, no, he's a human. And of course, John Connor is looking at him and he's not human, definitely. And so there's lots of oohing and aahing and, battle of wills against a machine.
Probably the best moment for... Christian Bale as John Connor in this movie, where he gives him his little speech about how
you and me, we've been at war since before either of us even existed. You tried killing my mother, Sarah Connor. You killed my father, Kyle Reese. You will not kill me. Kyle Reese. He's on a transporter, heading for Skynet. If I wanted to kill him, I would have done him in L.A.
Yeah, and he says that you killed my mother, Sarah Connor. You killed my father, Kyle Reese. You will not kill me.
Except that neither of those are true.
Well, remember we were talking about how he treats every Terminator like it's just a part of the Terminator machine?
Yeah, but... The Terminators didn't kill his mother, and the Terminators didn't kill his father.
Well, okay, hold on. Cancer killed his mom.
They did kill Kyle Reese.
Yeah, kill Kyle Reese, right?
Well, yeah. First of all, not yet in that timeline.
Well, yeah, that's, yes.
But second of all, the Terminator...
But also already.
Yes.
And it's possible that Cameron killed Sarah Connor by cancering her.
Right, by walking around topless.
With her leaky boobs, yes. She had, yeah.
Leaky boobs. I think that's a Snow song, isn't it? Leaky boobs down. Mm-hmm. Informer. I don't know.
Yes, I remember it well.
You're going to have to, I don't know anything about Snow, so you're going to have to send me the thing so I can put it in the book.
I will.
Okay, please do.
Leaky boom boom down.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You'll remember it.
Yes, you will remember it.
Okay, all right. Informer. You know, say that I'm a slow me, I go blam. I like you, boom, boom, bam. Take the man that says that I'm a slow me, stab somewhere down the lane. I like you, boom, boom, bam. Informer. You know, say that I'm a slow me, I go blam. I like you, boom, boom, bam. Take the man that says that I'm a slow me, stab somewhere down the lane. I like you, boom, boom, bam. So now we have this problem because Blair has fallen in love with Marcus because she admires his heart. And he believes himself to be human, so he is now a tragic figure, a Terminator we can feel sorry for.
Yeah, he's a different kind of Terminator. He has like human organs, specifically a very strong heart, Chekhov's heart, if you will.
Yeah, he is as Julia Roberts is to prostitutes. He is to Terminators.
Yes.
Although we don't get to hear him singing in a bathtub.
No, that was going to be in the sequel.
Yeah, I'm sure. So Marcus demands to be released because he's human and he needs to save Kyle from Skynet. And John, of course, orders him to be destroyed. But Blair, treacherous witch, releases him and helps him escape. And so during the resulting pursuit, Marcus saves John's life from the Skynet Hydrobots. The fact that I have to say the word Hydrobot makes me irritated a little bit.
These were stolen directly from The Matrix, by the way.
Of course, yeah.
They were definitely Matrix ripoffs.
Yes. So, and they looked fine. They were menacing and scary and snake-like with teeth and centipede-like things and stuff. So it all worked, but it just, yeah, it just seems like everything was a ripoff in this movie. So, of course, after Marcus saves John's life, then they have to form an alliance, and they're going to take down Skynet. Now, in the meantime, John has had this fight with Scanner Guy about the fact that they are going to bomb Skynet's headquarters. Well, John knows that there are humans captive in Skynet headquarters, including Kyle Reese, who is his dad, and therefore he must save him. And Michael Ironside is like, no, you're not in charge of this mission. We will be bombing as scheduled, thank you. So John's gonna save them all on his own, because there's no one else to help him. So he leaves his pregnant wife, who is nameless, and he takes off, and his only friend slash companion, not companion, that's too romantic. His only ally is a machine. Damn dirty ape. So John, he does have this messiah power, so he goes on the resistance radio and says, it was a Mata Hari like, your commanders are going to tell you to do stuff, but don't do it. It's a trick. I'm John Connor, and I've approved this message. So now we have a race against time.
Yeah, and he goes full on badass at this point.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, he is a superhero.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So John is demanding to Ashdown that he delay the attack so he can ready to the rescue. Ashdown says no and relieves John of his command. He has to turn in his badge and his gun, but he's going to take the law into his own hands, despite what the sergeant says.
I think this was the point where Christian Bale says, "Are you fucking kidding me?" And then just found some dude to yell at.
Exactly. So, anyway, this is where it starts to get interesting and lame all in the same period of time. Because Marcus enters the Skynet base through lots of scampering, but also just like, hello, it's me, I'm a Terminator, see? And so the big giant robot doesn't just blast his ass from the beginning, but once he gets past the giant Terminator Transformer robot, then he has to sneak around and get into places. But he manages to interface directly with Skynet. And then we get to see his O-face.
Yeah, he's going to get some answers.
Yeah, interesting answers. I thought actually the conversation he has with Skynet, who is, for purposes of just him being comfortable, the appearance of Serena Kogan, where she congratulates him on completing his mission. And he was an infiltrator robot, an infiltration prototype, and one of a kind, and they resurrected him, sort of, and they sent him into the resistance to lead them back so that they could kill John Connor once and for all.
And this is where it's part Oblivion, the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Skynet realized that they kept sending machines back to kill John Connor, and they were all failures because they were soulless and had no heart.
Yes.
No heart.
That was the problem, of course. Mm-hmm. But the idea that, the one thing that Sam Worthington did, and I think I had mentioned in text messages as I was watching this movie that, last week when I just offhanded saying, well, who doesn't like Sam Worthington? I think I was thinking more of, Sam Rockwell. Because I had no idea who Sam Worthington was at that time.
The moon.
I might as well have been Sam Elliott. So,
beef.
Yeah.
Both of those would have been really interesting choices for this movie.
So, no, and I think Sam Worthington did a fine job in this movie, you know, I guess.
I think he did a great job for what he had.
Yeah, yeah, he didn't have... it. He was, you know...
He gave it all his heart.
Well, yeah. I like your bum bum now. If John Connor was Batman, then Sam Worthington was sort of like the tragic hero where he just doesn't have enough information, so he thinks he's doing the right thing, but... He's explained to him that no. His whole job was just to bring in John Connor so they can kill him and Kyle Reese too at the same time. And so thank you.
And it worked.
Yeah, it totally worked. It's great. And the signal, the magical signal that disables the robots when it's on, that was all a trick.
It's a trap.
Of course it was.
Yeah.
Wah, wah.
So then when she says that, you Marcus, you did what Skynet has failed to do for so many years. You killed John Connor. Don't fight, Marcus. Remember what you are. And then Marcus says, I know what I am. I like your bum bum now. Yeah, so then he rips the computer chip out of his head. And how does that work? He's no longer in control of Skynet, but he's still functioning.
He had one of those resistor bolts on him, like in like the droids had in Star Wars, that the Jawas put on. So yeah, he just crushed that thing on the back of his head, and then he's all right.
Okay, cool. That's good to know that. She says, "You'll not be given a second chance. You cannot save John Connor." And Marcus says, "Watch me. Talk to the hand." I like your bum bum now. So then he assists John in battling the T-800 Model 101.
Okay, so this is where I have
Master Sergeant Candy.
This is where I have a huge problem with this. So you're Terminator, and your soul. I guess I shouldn't use soul because they don't have souls. Your singular goal is to kill John Connor. At the first moment you have him in your grip, why would you throw him? Why wouldn't you just crush him or penetrate him with some spike or knife or stabbing weapon? But no, you're going to throw him across the room? Why?
Well,
it makes no sense.
No, the first rule of Terminator Jitsu is you take your opponent and you throw them forcefully through sheetrock if you can find it. But masonry if you can't find sheetrock. By the way, have I ever mentioned that when I was watching, even in the theater, I think, The Matrix, I thought, you know, it may not be real, but if I was in the Matrix world, I would want to be a mason because those guys must be working all the time. All that marble and stuff that Keanu Reeves is shooting through and smashing in the movie. Ugh, it must be just... They must just make money hand over fist.
So, have we discussed that both the Wachowski brothers are now sisters?
We have not discussed it, but it certainly is interesting.
I mean, good for both of them.
Yeah, but it's weird. You have to admit it's weird.
It's different. I mean, for sure. I mean, good for them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Was the second brother was basically outed, so he outed himself? Is that what happened?
I don't know.
Didn't somebody threaten to expose him?
Probably.
Or her. Sorry, I'm going to have a pronoun problem briefly.
I'm pretty sure at least one of them just... really lost a bad bet.
Well, that's a little insensitive.
Well, they're not twins, right? I mean, you don't have like a sympathetic penectomy.
It is very, very odd and unexpected. But yeah, you know, kudos to them for being in a position where they are secure enough in their life that they can make such a drastic transformation and still live and work in the public eye.
And I think we learned from Pioneer Caitlyn Jenner that you can be like a pioneer in social change and still be an asshole.
My point was going to be that they're kind of the counter to Caitlyn Jenner.
Yeah. So. Well, again, I don't want to put people on too high a pedestal, you know. Much like our former governor and future judge, you know, we put her on too high a pedestal and you're going to fall. Just the nature of things. So, okay, so sorry, back to the nature of things and the humanity of robots. We end up with this big, long, drawn-out fight, and it lots of it actually harken back to other Terminator fights, so that's satisfying. And it's not exactly in a it's in a factory, but it's not exactly as quite as industrial as some of the other factory scenes in the other movies, but it works.
They kept making the point that this was supposed to be some super large Skynet hub.
Yeah, it was their base, right? Like their like San Francisco was their base of operations.
Yeah, but by the end of the movie, it made it sound like them destroying this didn't accomplish anything.
Well, that's the trick. We're going to have to get into the end of this movie. So, yeah, so we have this whole big fight where John ends up getting shanked with not a knife or stabbing weapon, but a piece of loose construction metal.
It looked like a pretty solid piece of metal fabrication.
Yeah. So... we think he's going to die.
Stabbed through the chest.
Yes. Yes.
After getting his iconic facial scar.
Yes. Yes. Which is good. Again, it adds to the whole, the universe, the canon. It adds that little bit. So then, of course, they destroy the Skynet base, by rigging the power cells together So Marcus, Kyle, and Star are all airlifted out, and so Kate, this is the part where I was like the movie was killing me, but it was gonna, you know, it's a thing. But then they had a field hospital, okay? Their covering over the tops of their heads was those like camo netting, like in MASH, not even like canvas tents. There is a breeze blowing through their little field hospital, and they're going to perform a heart transplant.
Well, but after a nuclear war, there's not a bunch of living stuff out in the open.
Oh, no, I don't mean like, I'm not thinking strictly of like sterile, like operating room sterility. I'm just thinking of the practical. You're replacing somebody's heart at a field hospital.
Well, where else are you going to do it?
Any building would be better. Any building.
There aren't a lot of buildings, remember?
I'm just saying. It just took me right out of it.
Again, and they're taking a robot heart or hybrid heart.
Well,
anyway.
That's the other part of it, is at the end, Sam Worthington sacrifices his human heart, which is attached to his Terminator body, and going to give it to John. And we know there's no tissue testing to see if they have the same blood type or anything. We're not going to talk about that. Like, what happens if John rejects his heart? And there's no, like, what, do they have a whole bunch of, like, anti-rejection medication just hanging around?
Yeah, because they already established that antibiotics were hard enough to come by.
Yeah, yeah. And this was a human heart, right? Or was it a half-human, half-robot heart?
Well, it's never clear. It's at least part human. So, although it's super strong, strong.
Well, heartbeat. I yada yada the part where the other Terminator hit him in the chest and stopped the heart from beating, but John got to do the improvised
transporter.
Yes, exactly. Crank. It was crank.
Crank. Sorry. Yeah. See, I thought this movie was just other movies.
Oh, we'll eventually have to watch the Crank movies because they are awesome, especially 2. But yeah. So we have this, what should be a touching scene where, you know, John comes out looking a little more human, maybe? I don't know. Sam is given the ultimate sacrifice, a human-like sacrifice.
The problem is, the movie is like, it's this one giant emotional funnel to get you to the point where you want John Connor to die.
Well, that's the thing.
Yeah. I actually, like I said, I would have been happier had he died. This would have been a better movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, the closer we get to that final battle, the less important John Connor is going to be.
Right.
I mean, we have all of these this structure built now. So
have any of us seen Genesis?
No.
No.
Okay. So next week's going to be super fun.
Oh, I can't wait. It'll be exciting.
Yeah. We're going to see if this just continues on this massive downward trajectory or if it...
Do both of you have a copy already?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, so this added all the schmaltz at the end but none of the heart. if you, you know, again, I'm going to overuse that. But yeah, this is a movie about heart that had no heart. That was my...
You should just drop in the Don Johnson heartbeat song. It's got to be. Everybody tells me how I can beat the odds for now. I've been standing by the fire. I just can't feel the heat. Can't feel the heat. Heartbeat. I'm looking for a heartbeat. Heartbeat. I'm looking for a heartbeat. Beating like mine.
Yeah, and at the end, John Connor sort of mutinies and backs his way into being the leader of the resistance.
Oh, yeah, actually, sorry. I yada yada the fact that the Skynet destroyed the command on the sub because the sub was...
They revealed themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hunt for Red October style.
Yeah, they were hoist on their own petard.
You bastards, we've killed ourselves. And it was funny because it was a Russian guy that delivered the, we've killed ourselves. Just like in the Hunt for Red October.
That's funny. I thought he was French.
Yeah, French, Russian.
But yeah, so John Connor got the entire resistance to stand down when the leadership wanted them to attack, and then the leadership got destroyed, and now, hey, John Connor with his robot heart is going to be the leader of the resistance. Not due to the force of his awesome intellect and command, but... just because
he got everybody else blown up.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and that, you know, again, it, I thought the Sarah Connor Chronicles did a good job in showing John's transformation into like a leader of men. This John Connor was not a leader of men at all. He did not take orders very well, and he led no one. He was a one-man fighting force.
That's right.
He was a bad soldier in the resistance.
Which is why it would have been way more interesting if he'd actually died and they had just replaced him with Marcus and called Marcus John Connor.
Yes.
Because like you're saying, all they really need is the concept of John Connor to lead the resistance.
That's it. So, Brother Jay, your judgment?
Well, like I said, I think this is a fine action movie if you divorce yourself from being any part of the Terminator franchise. It's a, you know, futuristic... apocalyptic downer of a movie with trying to aspire to a happy message. It's a C movie. You know, I don't feel like I wasted my time watching it, but it's not something I'm going to put in rotation. So it's okay. That's as much enthusiasm as I can cull up for it. So
I say, save your time and watch the Children of Men instead. Or T2.
No.
Just watch T2.
Yeah, T2 is better. I'm looking forward to Genesis because the little tagline in the bottom says the best Terminator since T2 Judgment Day.
Well, that's just realism. That's not even aiming.
So, yeah.
Okay, so shall we 2001 6 degrees?
Yes.
Okay.
Do I need to get my
No, I'm good this
you got
week.
It?
Yes. So, Terminator Salvation, starring Christian Bale. Who starred in 2005's The New World with Christopher Plummer. Was in 1981's The Amateur with Robert Beatty, who was Dr. Ralph Halvorsen in 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Banana! The New World. Was that a Terrence Malick movie?
Oh, it might have been. I don't know. Christopher Plummer turns out to be a good... once you can find Christopher Plummer, you can link anybody. He's been in everything. There's a lot of yarn coming off of him in my yarn map. So, What order do we want to do our post-show housekeeping? Shall we start off with car story time?
Oh, we can.
Okay.
So I will preface this that the car salesman that Derek and I dealt with when we bought my spaceship, which is apparently now what it's called. It's called the spaceship. Hasn't worked at the dealership very long, although he's worked at other car dealerships. I think he's new to the Ford family. And Derek and I put him through the ringer. He had a pretty stressful time with us because we were educated shoppers and I'm very stubborn. And I dug my heels in. As anybody who knows me, you know, if I set my mind to it, I'm pretty much immovable. So having said that, and having them service the car and then having them damage the car and then having them fix the car, I perhaps was a little hypervigilant when I went to pick up my car and it still wasn't fixed. So,
just to remind people or to introduce it to people who didn't listen to last episode on the story of Brother Jay buying a car that included a special package that included one of those for real special coatings where they spray the paint and guarantee it for 10 years or something.
Yeah, it was an add-on product to protect the paint because one of my apprehensions of buying a black vehicle was that I've owned a black vehicle and I was concerned about having to deal with the paint because that's one of the issues I had with my last lemon. Not that this is a lemon, it's not, but and they said, well, we have a solution for that if you'd like. And, you know, we can certainly discuss that. And it's not a lot of money. In fact, I paid cash to have it done. So it wasn't even financed. So when we had gone to pick up the car and we were reviewing the car, you know, there was still some damage evident, which they're going to make right, but not quite done. But they did fix the paint issue in majority. I took the car home and I'm happy with it. And there's still a couple issues they're going to fix, but they're going to make it right. Plus, I get to go back and review our parents' SUV when they buy it, because it will be coming in a couple weeks. And I'm going to go over that with a fine tooth comb before they ever get it off the lot. But as a postscript to my happy story, I received a phone call on Sunday night, which I didn't notice on my voicemail on my phone, because nobody calls me and leaves me voicemail, so I don't ever think to check my phone. Monday, I received another phone call from the dealership, and it was one of the lot boys that was wondering where the loaner car I had was, because they couldn't find it on the lot.
Nice.
So I said, well, I don't understand. And they said, well, it's not on our service lot. It's not on our main lot. And it's not on our overflow lot. So do you happen to know who you gave the keys to? I'm like, yep, to the salesman, my salesman. And they're like, okay, all right. Because we can't find the car anywhere. So yeah, all right, thanks. So, and I double checked with Derek. I'm like, you were with me when I handed the keys to the salesperson, right? He said, oh yeah. I'm like, okay. You know, you may need to help me with that. So as it turns out, the loaner car is missing.
Well,
but the good news is, as I told Derek and I told the guy on the phone, said it only had about 12 miles left before I was out of gas. So, you know, they couldn't have gotten very far.
Excellent. Okay, so, Drew, did you have stories to tell?
No.
Did you go off of your steroids yet?
I'm starting a extremely long taper.
Oh, well, that's probably a good idea. Yeah. Cool.
Which I was not all that happy to find out about. I'll be on them like for a total of like another month and a half.
Yeah, but you want a slow taper, because if you just stop them cold turkey, you actually can have much worse complications unrelated to any other condition.
Oh, sure. I don't want that. I just hate being on them.
So. Sure. No, it's
finding out it's going to be much longer was a depressing moment for me.
Yeah. It's yeah. Well, hopefully it will end up being beneficial to you. So, But I empathize yeah. completely. I feel for you.
I think I'm still going to be on them when I go to San Diego, which is great because one of the main side effects I'm experiencing from them is body acne.
Excellent.
So, yeah. So, fun beach vacation.
Excellent. Well, yeah, excellent. Well, I know Connie is keeping up on your health and, you know, there's crockery that that is possibly at stake. So, not to mention your health, which we care about.
Yeah, no change. Medication still working. I'm just sweaty and pimply. That's it.
Sweet. Well, some of us, that's just Wednesday. So, you know, be happy.
Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on our new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.